This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, time for Sharp Money on this Monday afternoon, July 29th. In case you haven't already realized, Patrick Maher not with us today. So I'll be filling in. Joe Serallo here alongside the usual, the mainstay of the show. I'm sure everyone's favorite element of the show, Dustin Sweetelson. Dustin, how you doing today?
My therapist's favorite element of the show, because I just go back and report to her what happened during the week, and she talks me through it. Joe, have you ever gotten the Jason Derulo effect on your name? Because I feel like people should sing your name back to you. I'd start money with Joseph Cerullo.
Dude, you know, I'm so glad you pointed that out, because I get that all the time. That was a go-to pickup line for me in college when I'd introduce myself to someone. That's how I would introduce myself. I can't believe that wasn't planned, folks. If you're just, you know, tuning in, watching, listening, that was not planned. And Dustin, that just endeared you to me so deep.
Well, I mean, also, it's a little congratulations. Yeah, an anniversary last night. Big bucks out in Malibu having a night with the young lady. How many years? 1 year? 2 years? Where are we at?
First anniversary.
Wow. And setting the bar pretty high by going to Malibu, I will say. So the second one's going to have to be a step up. There might be a diamond involved.
Well, I mean, you know, if you think Malibu's fun, we're going to Hawaii next week to celebrate.
That's awesome,
trying
man.
To get all the airtime I can get in with you before I kick it on Waikiki Beach, man. We've got a lot to get to early on in this one, because we're together for 6 of the final 27 hours leading up to Major League Baseball's trade deadline, which means a lot of breaking news today, even more breaking news tomorrow as we'll be on the air right up until the deadline itself. We just had some news come in. Eric Fetty, who went over to Korea last year, reinvented himself, signed a 2-year deal with the White Sox. He's being shipped to St. Louis in a 3-way deal. Tommy Edman going from the Cardinals to the Dodgers. Michael Kopech, the former starter turned reliever, going from the White Sox to the Dodgers, and a slew of prospects going to the south side of Chicago in that deal. That's the breaking news right now. We're going to circle back to it, but we actually have a first pitch that's 2 minutes away, Dustin. Orioles, Blue Jays, game one of a doubleheader, and the debut of a Zach Eflin. What do you like in this game?
All right. One, I love the trade for Zach Eflin to Baltimore long-term, Joe. I think it's a great move, mainly because he's under contract next year and they're likely going to lose Corbin Burns. But as far as his debut goes, he just faced Toronto last week. It's his first start for Baltimore, but faced Toronto with Tampa Bay on Wednesday. 6 hits, 2 earned, 4 strikeouts. You look at what he's done in his career against Toronto, and it's not been good. He's also notoriously bad in the second half. 5.09 ERA in the second half versus 3.93 in his career in the first half. And you look at his numbers versus Toronto specifically, 2-3 record in 8 games, 7 starts, a 5.90 ERA. And I don't trust these Baltimore bats with runners in scoring position of late. I'm going to take a flyer at plus 130 on Toronto in the first 5 with Yariel Rodriguez on the bump, who's been pretty good for them. And the Blue Jays, despite being sellers, just are coming off a sweep of Texas over the weekend. So let's stick with the team that's a little bit hotter here and get the value on the first 5.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because you mentioned the Blue Jays as sellers, what they do in the next 24 hours or so. Because they've kind of sold off some smaller ancillary pieces, right? Nate Pearson, who, you know, is 2 more years of arbitration eligibility. He got dealt to Chicago. Really weird what the Cubs are doing at the deadline. Danny Jansen staying in the division, the catcher going to Boston, who seemed to carry like 4 catchers on their 26-man roster. It's a little weird. But the Blue Jays, the big names are still there. Vladdy, Bichette. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because they're so far out of it. I like the play. Now, I've got no action in this game, but I like the play because Zach Eflin, you know, he's not as good as he was a year ago with Tampa Bay. He's definitely taken a step back this season, and Toronto has seen him a ton. And whenever you have a recurring matchup, this will be the 4th time this season Eflin is seeing the Blue Jays advantage hitters when you're seeing a guy 4 times in a year. The pitcher always has the edge of the first time, maybe even the second time. Once you're 4 deep, advantage lineup. I like your play here. I think Toronto could definitely get out there, score some early runs. And Baltimore is just, I mean, they burned me so many times last week, man. That Miami series, I had a money line, run line in the game that they led 6-0 and won 7-6. I was cleanly swept in that series, man. They are just, I don't know what's going on in Baltimore. Not the right time. They really could have ran away with the East. And I mean, I'm curious what you think about that division, because Baltimore, I got them plus 210 at the All-Star break to be the one seed in the American League. And they had a chance to really run away with it out of the All-Star break. And they've kind of squandered that opportunity thus far. They can still do it, but so far they've missed an opportunity.
Yeah, one quick note on today. Vlad has great numbers against Eflin. 4-1 to hit a homer, or you can go over 1.5 total bases. It's something I'd consider as well. As far as Baltimore big picture, I don't think they're done, Joe. I think we're going to see some more moves here. You got to remember
that
there's new ownership coming in here. They want to make a splash. They want to capitalize on this opportunity. It's a young core, which means there's not a lot of guys getting paid. So there's an opportunity with the payroll to be a little bit flexible here down the stretch. I'd like to see some veterans added, specifically in the bullpen. Someone who can take that job from Craig Kimbrell, because that cannot be happening anymore if you expect to win the pennant and represent the AL in the World Series. So I think they need another bullpen arm, maybe two, maybe even another starter, just in case, because you got to remember, the deadline's so early. You could still lose a starter somewhere along the way and not have a major league ready arm to replace them. So I'd like to see them add a veteran guy that maybe they stash away at AAA for a while, and then they could use a veteran bat off the bench. There's so much youth. I would like to add a little bit more experience to this team right now. But upside-wise, my favorite thing about backing young teams is I think we underestimate their ability to get better as they get more comfortable, as the season goes on. And I think the Baltimore Orioles have the potential to continue to do that throughout the summer, because I am not buying the New York Yankees. I think that lineup is still shallow, even after the addition of Jazz Chisholm. And while at one point in the year in June, they had the best pitching and hitting in baseball, that pitching has absolutely fallen apart, and I do not trust that rotation, and it starts with Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen major regression from Carlos Rodon, who looked great yesterday, but still we've seen a ton of regression from him. Nestor Cortes, Marcus Stroman, even Luis Gil, who's going tonight in Philly at Citizens Bank Park against Zach Wheeler. We've got a play on that one to come. That's going to be a really fun one to dive into. But I agree. And when you're dealing with the youth that Baltimore has, I think something else that you're dealing with is that those guys tend to have shorter memories, right? A loss this time of year might not faze them the same way as a guy who's been around the block, who's like, oh, shoot, you know, historically, if you don't, you know, get up to speed by July 29th, you know, if you're trending in the right, those young kids tend to just go out there and let it rip, right? Like, you're going to make mistakes. I mean, you want to talk about mistakes? Look at Gunnar Henderson when he botched that ball in the ninth inning right off the heel of his mitt when Kimbrel blew the save in Miami. They were up 6-3. By the way, you're spot on with Kimbrel. I mean, can we, how many blown, I know, you know, the ERA was like 2.5 a week ago. Now it's over 3. How many blown saves are we going to endure, and are we going to live through? Forget going outside to get bullpen help, which they should certainly do, but you can make the closer switch right now and put Cano in there. I mean, to me, he's their best reliever. I would make him the closer yesterday if I was Baltimore. Kimbrel, I can't sit through another blown save where if he doesn't get one call from the ump, or if he gives up one hit, or maybe the defense makes a suspect play, it's just he loses all control, will walk the next 2-3 guys, and then it's hell from there.
Yeah, it's really tough for the Orioles because they were banking on Felix Bautista being young and controllable in that closer role for so long. Cano really is better as a setup guy. I think Baltimore knows he's better when they can use him in a higher leverage spot earlier in the game. And a lot of teams have done that of late. Take their best arm, use him in the seventh and eighth, and have someone to close the door. The problem is, Craig Kimbrell's a guy, he's towards the back end of his career. He doesn't have the stuff he used to have. You can put the ball in play, and he throws so hard. If you do, it's going to go somewhere. They desperately need to find a closer out there to take that spot, because Craig Kimbrell cannot be – it's like Russell Westbrook and Russell Wilson. I can't say Craig Kimbrell for some reason. But you cannot use him if you're going to have meaningful games down the stretch.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Not even a 3-run lead – going up against the 6, 7, and 8 hitters of the league's 29th ranked offense is safe if Kimbrel's going out there for the ninth. And I do want to make one note. He did have to get about 5 outs that inning.
Sure.
Because there was the Norby tripping on the ground ball to second base that he was charging. Would have been 2 outs, no one on, first 2 guys retired. And then Gunner boots it. Jake Berger, Kimbrel made a beautiful pitch, would have been 3, ump called it a ball. So everything that could have gone wrong for Kimbrel did go wrong, but still, nonetheless, 6, 7, 8 coming up, do your damn job.
Also, 6 blown saves for him, that's the most he's had in a season since 2011.
Wow. that's
where were you in 2011, Joe?
2011, I was turning 13. I was wrapping up seventh grade.
That's why I asked that question. That's why
And your point about Baltimore needing a starter, by the way, they absolutely do. Right now, I've been told that they're talking to the Tigers as we speak about a Scooble deal. 2.5 years of control. We all know Baltimore. They want the young guys with the club control. And they need a lefty, I think, specifically, right? You've got Burns. You've got Grayson Rodriguez. Albert Suarez started great. He's come back down to earth lately. Mm-hmm. You know, Cole Irvin hasn't really – it's been really a mishmash of guys because they're missing two key starters, John Means from the left side and Kyle Bradish, who last year was their ace, both out for the year. So you definitely need something beyond Burns, Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, who I didn't mention. You need one more top-of-the-rotation guy, a top-three guy. Scooble gives them a 1A, 1B situation between Burns and him. That would be great. I thought they were going to go for Crochet. I was convinced, you know, 2 weeks ago. But right now, Crochet, with the long-term deal being needed, and now you're seeing some regression there, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he gets moved, because some teams might look at that and just say, that's too much baggage. We don't want to deal with it. It's wild, because if I'm Detroit, I don't deal Scooble, since he's got 2.5 years of control and you could be a playoff team next year. But if you're the Orioles, Dustin, go all in, right?
I actually like it for Detroit. The question is, would Baltimore have to give up Jackson Holliday in that trade? I don't think so.
I think they can navigate it without doing that, but I would. If that's what it costs, I would do it. They've got so many bats and they need pitching. I would part ways if it was a one for one. Guys, whole lot more to come. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Sharp Money on Visa. In the college football playoff Final Four, which teams will surprise and which will disappoint? All of those questions and more can be answered by reading the 2024 VSiN College Football Betting Guide. Detailed team previews, picks, and best bets from our writers, hosts, and personalities. Hey, that's me. Just a few clicks away by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not only will you get the College Football Betting Guide, but also our recently released NFL Betting Guide and an all-access pass to daily best bets, picks at a glance, and full access to our betting splits. So check out current offers right now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As we keep it moving here on Sharp Money, no Patty Maher today. So I'm in, Joe Cirillo, alongside the usual mainstay, the best part of the show, some might say, Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, we got some early baseball we got to, some trade deadline action. I'm sure there's going to be more breaking news today. But wanted to get into a little football, too, because I don't know what you think, my man. These contracts to me for quarterbacks who have not proven squat yet are getting really out of hand.
Well, I think I've created this new way of looking at this, and it's either the quarterback I have can win a Super Bowl or he can't. If he can, I'm going to pay him like someone he can. I'm going to pay him as much as I can early because I will get then value on the back end of that deal to be flexible. It hurts you up front in the salary cap, but down the road, because these quarterbacks just keep getting paid and the price keeps going up, we all get outraged every time a player gets paid with a new deal at quarterback, and then we look and three or four more over the next 2 years get paid, and all of a sudden that previous quarterback looks like they were shopping at TJ Maxx.
You know, the thing is, though, that confuses me. Some of these deals, you say he either can or he can't win a Super Bowl. Some of these guys getting paid, I look at, and I go, there's no way they can win a Super Bowl, right? Tua Tagovailoa, I look at, and I confidently say, there is no way this guy can win a Super Bowl.
Okay, I get what you're saying, because I think in the past we used to look at quarterbacks as being system proof, right? Is he a system quarterback or is he system proof? There's not many anymore that fall into that category of system proof. Most quarterbacks in the NFL, their success is based on the coaching and the system. There are no Tom Brady's or Peyton Manning's who can show up and make a bad coordinator with a bad game plan look good anymore. It just doesn't exist.
Mahomes, so probably the only one.
Yeah, I agree with you that Tua, if we're looking at it from that perspective, is not a guy who would go to another franchise and make them Super Bowl contenders. However, I would say Tua, in the system he's in now, with the weapons they have in place in that situation, he can win a Super Bowl.
Interesting. I don't think Miami has enough around him. I mean, I think they throw all their money at Tua, Tyreek, and Jalen Waddle, and then they like a guy like Christian Wilkins walk to go to the Raiders. And I mean, they got nothing in the trenches on either side, and they got nothing past the trenches on defense. This is a very incomplete team to me.
No, they are right now. But I'm not talking about just winning a Super Bowl this year, right? You lock him up. There is longevity there. And then as that deal becomes a better deal, now you have the money on the cap to replace guys like Christian Wilkins. But I do agree. The offensive line, they did sort of patch it together this offseason, made a couple of additions. But I think a lot of people are underestimating the impact of losing Christian Wilkins. When you have a defensive tackle like that in the middle of that line at the line of scrimmage command the respect that he did for the last couple years there, it allowed other pieces on the back end to flourish. Without that, without some of the edge pieces, I do wonder what this defense looks like next season.
Yeah, there's a lot of question marks there because they've already shown us they can put up 56, you know, against the bad teams, right? But can you get a stop against the good teams? Because then Baltimore came in and put up 56 on them with ease. Dustin, we got some Tua audio about this deal. If that's queued up, I want to get to that and get some other perspectives on it.
Yeah, so Tua met with the media after the deal, and they kind of asked, all right, it's finally done, so what's next for you?
What's next for you? Like, what's the best part about having all this done and kind of looking forward to the next, you know, hopefully get this organization that playoff win and the bigger picture winning it all?
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what we're looking forward to. Now that all of this is done, this is behind us, we know, like, heavy is the crown, you know? So whoever's wearing that, like, right now, I'm the highest paid employee in this office. Like, I mean, I got to get my, you know, whatever together. I got to get that right and get our guys moving in the direction that we need to go, you know, to be able to do those things.
Heavy is the crown. Yeah, I would say, especially when, you know, as the reporter more kindly than I'm about to point it out, they haven't won a playoff game yet with Tua.
Sure.
65 mil hasn't won a playoff game yet. I don't know. I've been low on Tua since he came out of college, in all fairness. I just never thought he had that it factor about him. And, you know, some people would say, oh, well, look at what he did coming off the bench for Jalen Hurts at Alabama. Much different game once you get to the pro ranks. And look, I just never thought Tua would be able to get it done here.
Yeah, look, he's like a lefty, older Brock Purdy. But he has the perfect match for what he wants to do. He has a good touch on his ball. He's an accurate passer, right? He's mobile enough. The concussions were a concern, but I think a lot of that was about the offensive line and them letting people through. But I think the ultimate point here is this team has the upside to be a Super Bowl contender in the next few years. I do believe that. I think the weapons on the outside make that very possible, especially when someone with the accuracy of Tua has two guys who can take short passes a long way. He doesn't have to heave it down the field. You're taking a lot of that burden off of Tua. I guess to your point then, why are you paying a guy you have to take the burden off of? I'd say, what's the better option? Like, how are you replacing him? And if you're Mike McDaniel, you let Tua go, you look for another quarterback. He may be an offensive guru. He may be a quarterback whisperer. But can you find that guy to come in and replace Tua and keep your job?
Well, they had Skylar Thompson in there, and he was more competitive in that playoff game against the Bills than Tua was against the Chiefs last postseason. So I'm not saying Skylar Thompson's better than Tua, but I'm saying you get a guy who's better than Skylar Thompson and maybe he can do the same job. Now, Jordan Love is a guy who I think has a much higher ceiling than Tua. My argument again would be we just saw 1 year out of him. Now, it was a great year. It was a year where he had no receiving core and he made those guys look like studs. Started slow, finished hot as hell. Still, it's tough for me to say, yeah, throw 55 mil at him when you just saw a glimpse, one season out of him. But I think Jordan Love long-term can probably get more done in this league. I'm curious, what do you think about the Packers this season? Because some people are saying Green Bay could be the best team in the NFC. I don't know if I'm ready to anoint them that just yet.
Yeah, I have a problem with pride, Joseph. My pride is getting in the way of me looking at this objectively. I was the final person on the bandwagon for Jordan Love. I was the last person to accept that he was a legitimate pro quarterback. I have questions, though, about year two, and here's why. And this is a little weird and outside the box. And this question also applies to the Houston Texans. You can, in the NFL, come out and take people by storm and surprise people with what you're able to do, what your strengths are, right? And that's what the Packers did, and that's what the Texans offense did a year ago. I have questions when these defensive coordinators are wizards. They get into their lab, they watch the film, they look for tendencies, they look for things that they can take away, they look for what you want to do, and then they exploit that from their perspective. I have questions after Green Bay put a season on tape of being a successful offense with Jordan Love. There's no catching people by surprise anymore. How can they adjust after these defenses adjust for them to start the year? I'm not saying he's not worth the money. I'm not saying this isn't a team that can win that division and make the playoffs. But I am curious to see how they're able to handle getting hit, because I do think defenses are ready for them this season.
Yeah, there's definitely limited tape on Love. There was limited tape on his receivers last year. It was a no-name core that not many people knew about. I'm glad you bring up opposing defensive coordinators, because, you know, this came up Saturday. I was hosting Live Bet Saturday. And sometimes people forget defensive coordinators have off seasons too, to do exactly what you just said, to study tendencies, to watch film, to learn how to exploit those up-and-comers' weaknesses. Now, in terms of an ego issue, because of my ego, I'm with you with Jordan Love. It took me a while. I was ready to call Jordan Love a bust a while ago. It took me a while to get there with him. But I'm typically pretty good at handicapping quarterbacks coming out of college. And a couple of years ago, my biggest call was Bryce Young will be the first pick, but they will regret it because CJ Stroud should be the first pick and is the best quarterback in this class. And I will never say that CJ Stroud is anything less than a division champ. I will never predict any or call for any regression from the Houston Texans. So defensive coordinators can look at all they want. CJ Stroud, I am a truther on this one, is going to take the league by storm yet again this year. Jordan Love may not.
Well, and we could also say that maybe CJ Stroud made Bobby Slowick's offense look good, but I think there is an argument to be made that Matt LaFleur's play calling was some of the most inspired offensive play calling we've seen outside of Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan in the NFL in recent memory. Like what he was able to dial up with Jordan Love's skill set, and I think that plays a role in wanting to pay a quarterback. Does the quarterback skill match what the coach wants to do? And there I do think they have a perfect marriage, which justifies the contract.
Yeah, do you think LaFleur, by the way, real quick before we get to break here, is having more fun, has more freedom, maybe feels a little less pressure working with Love as opposed to Rodgers? Because we didn't see that creative play calling with Rodgers.
Well, no, I think he gets to be a head coach now. He gets to be a play caller. He gets to do the basics of the job that he signed up for, not do PR for Aaron Rodgers.
I love it. It's a great way to put it, and I think you're 1,000% spot on. This is now, for the first time, LaFleur's team, not Aaron Rodgers' team. Maybe more about Rodgers and the Jets later, but we've got Ryan Ripken up next. Back to the Diamond after this. All right, Sharp Money rolls along on this Monday afternoon. I'm Joe Serallo in for Patrick Maher, joined by the usual, everyone's favorite, Dustin Sweetelson. And we're going to hit the progressive guest line here because we have a member of one of baseball's royal bloodlines joining us. He played for the Nationals and the Baltimore Orioles himself. Host of the Ryan Ripken Show, it's Ryan Ripken. Ryan, how you doing, man?
Doing great. I'm glad to join you guys today. Happy Monday. I'm losing track of days right now, fellas, just because it feels like every single day around the trade deadline, it's Groundhog Day, where you're just constantly checking your phone. So happy Monday to you guys, and glad to be here.
Yeah, man, and that trade deadline, obviously, it's all that any baseball fan is thinking about right now. It's one of the best times of the year. It always is. And so let's talk about your Baltimore Orioles and what they're expected to do, what they've already done as one of the biggest buyers on the market this year. They've already added Zach Eflin to the rotation. They've made a move with Philly, where I thought this was an interesting one. We all know they need bullpen help, but they got Sir Anthony Dominguez for Austin Hayes, who had just seemed to be heating up at the plate. I wasn't so sure about that move. What's next? What's at the top of your wish list? They're right now being linked to three prime left-handed starters. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so, I mean, to touch on that initially, right, there's no secret. The Orioles have been decimated with injuries so far this year, specifically in the pitching department, right? You know, I think, and I'm knocking on wood as I say this, so if any Birdland fans hear me, you know, their starting rotation, Corbin Burns, Grayson Rodriguez, Dean Kramer, John Means, Tyler Wells. I think I'm blanking on another, but your opening day rotation, or what you hoped it would be, right? Only one of those guys has escaped the IL. That's Corbin Burns, right? Grayson's obviously healthy, but you're hearing the theme now. pitching. They need another arm, and they need another, probably one more starting reliever. I think that they've made two moves. They probably need two more. I love the Zach Eflin pickup. I think he's a consistent guy. He's going to have team control, and he's around the plate. So you know teams are going to have to earn it against him, and he'll fit in with that great wall of Baltimore there in left field. And the Austin Hayes move, I think that's a great move for Philly. The Orioles get Dominguez, a veteran pitcher that's not pitching his best right now, but a guy that has experience. And that is something that I think the Orioles would need. And my wish list is they need experienced arms in high leverage situations, specifically at the back end of the bullpen.
Yeah, and Austin Hayes, a veteran who's going to have to get paid and kind of don't need him with the plethora of prospects available to play the outfield right now, Ryan, for this Baltimore team. I guess you know this ownership group pretty well. My question would be is, how aggressive do you expect them to be year one? Because it does feel like an opportunity for a young up-and-coming team that's expected to do big things, and they have plenty of prospects to deal with deep into the organization. How aggressive do you expect them to be here in adding multiple pieces?
Well, I think they're definitely aggressive. They're making their calls. They're doing their homework, right? And I think that everyone is just waiting now, going, go make that big move. Go make that splash. But it takes two to tango, one. And then also when you're looking at some of those big names, you know, the Detroit Tigers with Skubal, Garrett Crochet with the Chicago White Sox, the price tag is high, where if you're either of the White Sox or the Tigers, you want a king's ransom. And for Mike Elias and the Baltimore Orioles and the ownership, you're going, well, do we want to sell the farm on guys that we think could be potential all-stars, plural all-stars of these untouchable prospects, and we want to give it up for what we hope can be a run this year? Crochet, I'm even a little bit more worried on. He's even said he wants an extension if he's going to pitch in the postseason this year because he's already reached his innings limit. So the Orioles are in this phase right now of, do you really push it and trade away some guys that you love and you want to see through for a guy that maybe, like, Skubal's the one guy that I would say, you know what, if you make a move, I get it. Him right there with Corbin Burns, 1-2 punch, that's the best in baseball, hands down. But are you willing to sacrifice guys that you think are going to be foundational pieces for the next 5 to 10 years? I think that's what they're extremely struggling with. And to be honest, I don't think that they're going to move guys like Jackson Holliday, Sam Basayo, or Kobe Mayo.
A Burns-Skubal 1-2 punch in the postseason just has to have every Orioles fan out there salivating right now thinking about that. He's Ryan Ripken joining us right now. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, at Ryan Ripken. Ryan, if Skubal is actually on the table, and for me, you know, I struggle to see for Detroit why they would deal him, because I know you'd get a big return back, but he's got 2.5 years of control. And this is a Tigers team that I believe thought they could be a playoff team, a wild card team this year. And I see no reason to think that they can't be next year. If I'm them, I want to hold Skubal and sell the guys that are in their walk years. But if they make him available to the Orioles, would you do Jackson Holliday for Skubal straight up 1-for-1 and then you don't have to give up any other prospects? Or would you try to do a Kerstad, Norby, and maybe an arm type of deal instead?
Man, you know what? This is pulling at the strings here. You know, we've had a lot of conversations here in Baltimore, and it's funny. You know, we have the Baltimore Sports Radio here, has their personal opinion on the value of players. And then I've had Detroit Tigers or Detroit sports fans and radio look at what Skubal's value is, right? Personally, though, to answer your question, I don't think that I could stomach giving up Jackson Holliday at being 20 years old. And I remind people, I was just getting into pro ball at 20 years old. I still didn't know what the heck I was doing with my life half the time. Still don't, by the way. But I think it's a reminder how young he is, and nothing's changed with the potential that he has. Today's day and age, pitching is a premium, no doubt about it. But arm injuries are at a higher rate than they've ever been. And Skubal obviously has his own injury history. Now, that's something you got to live with. And if you're the Tigers, you brought up that big point. There's no reason to move him unless there's something that there's an offer that blows the doors down. And that's the point right there for the Tigers. You are close. You feel like you're close. You better get exactly what you want and more from the Orioles before you let Skubal go. And that's just why I don't think that there's a package that is going to entice them unless they get Jackson. And I just don't see the Orioles letting their number one prospect go.
All right, well, a big issue for this team right now is the back end of that bullpen and Craig Kimbrel. Another issue seems to be hitting with runners in scoring positions at times here in the second half. Level of concern in both of those, and obviously one can be addressed by adding another closer. Expectations going forward for both of those things.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and I feel bad for Craig Kimbrel because I still love Craig. And we were talking about, you know, before coming on here, the old Armando Benitez days of he was a great closer back in the day, but people remember him for giving it up. For Craig Kimbrel, he is going to go down as one of the best closers to ever play the game of baseball. But right now there's moments where fans are stressed every time he takes the mound. And unfortunately for Craig, the last couple outings haven't been what he's hoped. Now, the Orioles defense hasn't helped them out either. So I don't think this is a Craig Kimbrel situation or a problem. For me, the Orioles have a high leverage pitcher problem. That's what I look. You need more guys that are comfortable late in the game that you can go to. One of those arms that they trusted was Danny Coulomb that hopefully is going to come back. But they need someone else to go to consistently, or two or three guys where they feel like can get the job done, because you're seeing it in moments. The Orioles aren't winning those close games as much as they were last year. They're not finishing it, and it does hurt losing Felix Bautista. So that's where that concern is. And as far as the hitting, it's doing the little things. You're right. And that's why I see a guy like Ryan Mountcastle. I think he does a lot of little things right. Sacrifice flies, gets the runners over, gets them in, and obviously has pop. The Orioles, as great and talented as they are offensively to hit the ball to the ballpark, they need to do the little things better. So talent-wise for the lineup, I'm not concerned on what they can do, but what is concerning is when the moments get tight, can you just do what's necessary? They have the pieces, it's just, can they change that philosophy?
Yeah, and you said it, Ryan. You know, fans get a little sick when Kimbrel goes out there in the ninth. Bettors get a little sick, too. I've got a Orioles run line ticket to prove that from the 6-3 lead they had against Miami that I ended up losing. I do have a question I want to follow up with, but real quick, because you mentioned Bautista, is there any shot he returns late this season, or is the nail in the coffin on that one?
I don't think you're going to see Bautista this year. And quite frankly, I hope not. And I love the guy. Felix was my teammate in AAA. Giant of a human being, but he's a gentle soul, but a guy that I would not want to see in the batter's box. It's not comfortable, and he just abuses and embarrasses you. Having said that, though, you're looking at your future, and this is a guy that you hope everything goes well. He'll be back. Have him be ready for 2025 and beyond, because I think that's where the Orioles, even as great as they are right now, I think they have a chance to be even better in the years ahead.
Yeah, and Ryan, last thing here in about 25 seconds or less. Outside of Baltimore, we've seen a flurry of other moves get made. What's your favorite one so far that you think is the biggest impact move?
You know what I'm interested with is Randy Arozarena to the Mariners, because Randy's starting to pick it up. They need a jolt out there in Seattle. So I'm going to keep my eye on that. I really liked it, and I do think that Randy's going to give that team a little juice out there in the AL West for the Mariners.
Great stuff, Ryan. Thank you so much for the time. Make sure you go give him a follow on Twitter at Ryan Ripken. Check out the Ryan Ripken Show on YouTube as well. We appreciate you, man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Fantastic stuff there, Dustin. That was fun insight for a team that I think you and I are both very high on. I know I've got the AL East ticket, the one seed ticket. We'll see what the Orioles do. Don't go anywhere. More Sharp Money right after this. Baseball's back, and so are Adam Burke's daily MLB winners. Make sure you check them out. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, and more only on VSiN.com. Make sure you check it out today. Joe Cirillo here filling in for Patrick Maher on Sharp Money alongside the mainstay, Dustin Sweetelson. Great show today. Dustin, I got to give you a quick shout out for your booking capabilities. I've always used my Rolodex and my guest booking as a way to sell myself, because most hosts don't have to do their own guest booking. And so that's kind of something I've taken with me to job interviews. And I gotta say, I am floored. For once, I have met someone who I think their Rolodex far exceeds mine.
Well, I'm an old man, Joe. I've been around a minute. I've been doing this professionally since
3 years on me. Come on.
What's that?
Well, yeah, 3 years on me.
How old are you?
26.
Buddy, Buddy, I was having my bar mitzvah when you were born. I don't know what you're – I'm almost 40. I've been doing this professionally since 07, so I should have more numbers at this point. We're playing the numbers at that point. I've been around the block a bit. I've moved around a lot. I've worked in like 5 or 6 different markets. So, yeah, you know, you have a great Rolodex, but remember, I've got more than double digits on you age-wise.
You know what? I wasn't going to tell the audience that, Dustin. I was, you know, you could pass, by the way. You could pass for like a 29, a 30.
I'm trying to on the dating apps.
There you go. Yeah, you and my father, who puts his age 15 years younger than it currently is on Bumble.
Pro move.
That's fun. 68-year-old dad on Bumble. Not lying. Wish I was for entertainment purposes. Not lying. Speaking of people that are on the move, got the trade deadline less than 27 hours away. And we've already, I would say, had a higher than usual number of deals made leading up to the deadline. I mean, every now and then, most years, I feel like you'll get a couple here and there, and then it's a flurry in the final 48 hours. We've already had a ton, some really interesting cases, like what's going on with the Cubs and the Tampa Bay Rays. They even made a deal together. The Cubs seem to be buying for next year.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, who is, you know, was just above 500, is having a full fire sale. It really ticks me off how they operate, like such a small market, you know, terrible operation down there. But we had a big news, a big deal today, a three-way deal. Eric Fetty going from the White Sox to the Cardinals, Tommy Edman from St. Louis to LA, Michael Kopech from Chicago to LA. And then right now what I've seen is Miguel Vargas and two prospects, maybe more prospects to come, going all those three in particular from the Dodgers to the South Side. First off, thoughts and prayers, T's and P's to Miguel Vargas. That's got to be awful to go from LA to the South Side, to go from first place to, you know, potentially worse than the 1962 Mets. So we just want to send our condolences to Miguel Vargas. But, you know, what stands out to me here the most is the Eric Fetty piece going to St. Louis, because the Cardinals are right in the thick of this wild card race but have a terrible rotation. Dustin, what stands out to you most in this deal?
Okay, a couple notes. Let's start with the Cardinals, who I backed at the beginning of the year at 33-1 to win the World Series. People thought I was crazy. And by the way, I don't think that's getting home, but let's think about this for a second. This morning I woke up knowing they've been on the Fetty track for a while, trying to bring him down to St. Louis. I bet them this morning to win the pennant at 30-1. So I got almost the same number I got to win the World Series to win the National League. So if they can win a playoff series or two, I can get creative there. And I do think it's a team that is built to be good for the long haul of the regular season. And once you get into this new Major League Baseball playoff format, it's anyone's game. Fetty has become a borderline ace. I would not mark him down as a true number one. But as you mentioned earlier, went to Korea, evolved as a pitcher. He's always had good stuff. He had good stuff when he was with the Washington Nationals. Now he's learned how to hone his craft a little bit more. And another note is, think about how he's had to pitch for Chicago. One, he knew it was an audition every time out. Pressure's on. But he also knew his margins were super slim every single start because he wasn't getting run support. Now he goes to a Cardinals team that I still think offensively can play better than they've been. Obviously, the power numbers for Goldschmidt and Arenado at the corners need to improve. But it's a team that can help him out with a little bit more run support than he's used to getting. I also think Tommy Pham going back to St. Louis is a really underrated aspect of this deal. Tommy Pham can play center field. He can play both corner spots. But he's also a notorious lefty killer. You add that into your lineup, especially the way you can mix and match things. And he's a really serviceable, winning baseball player. It's just he has a bad reputation in clubhouses, and that's going back a long time to his original stay in St. Louis. But I do like it from a Cardinals perspective first. Your thoughts for them?
Yeah, my first thought is the Tommy Pham part of that deal new news? I don't think that was reported originally. I'm seeing it on the screen now. You're not wrong. I'm not correcting you. But I don't think that was originally reported in this deal. This is frankly the first I'm hearing of the Tommy Pham aspect of that trade. And that makes me love it for St. Louis even more. Look, I don't think Eric Fetty is a guy you can ask to go out there in a postseason series and be your number one. But you got Sonny Gray for that.
Yep.
Now, if Fetty is more in the 2-3 range, I mean, don't forget, this guy's been top 15 in ERA this year in Major League Baseball. That's absurd. I don't think anyone thought a guy on a 2-year, $15 million contract coming back to the States from Korea would be top 15 in ERA. He's been great. he's working, you know, location well. He doesn't walk a lot of guys because he doesn't have that A-plus stuff, right? He's got that new reinvented sweeper, which seems to be a new pitch that, no pun intended, is sweeping across Major League Baseball now. It's like everyone has a new sweeper this year. And Fetty's definitely in on that craze. But the Tommy Pham aspect I like a lot too, because you mentioned it. Goldie and Arenado's power numbers are way down. And I don't trust St. Louis's bats come the postseason against, you know, when you're shortening the rotation, running out your 3-4 best starters, their lineup has caused for a lot of concern to me. But now Tommy Pham gives you a little pop, right? He's not a really high OBP guy. He's a free swinger, but he's definitely a guy who scares opposing pitchers, whether it's, you know, with his bat or with his fist during warm-up. but I love the Tommy Pham aspect of this deal. This is, like I said, that's the first time I've seen that Pham was going to St. Louis in addition to Fetty, and it makes me love that deal that much more. I'm also, I haven't seen any prospects leave St. Louis yet. I've seen only Dodger prospects.
That is a good note. We don't know who St. Louis gave up.
Right. I mean, right now it seems to be just Tommy Edman, who certainly has, you know, upside to his game, but he hasn't played a single game this year for them. And, you know, he's a 260 hitter. He's got great speed. He's got defensive versatility.
Yeah.
They need pop. They need pitching. They got what they need this year.
Yeah, from the Dodgers' perspective, this is what always scares me, is when, if I was an organization, I had a player that I knew was capable of playing better, and he wasn't, and the Dodgers came calling wanting to get him, I'd really question what they know about that player that I'm not able to squeeze out. Because you can guarantee when Tommy Edman is activated off the IL eventually, he's been on it all year, there's a chance that the Dodgers will know exactly how to deploy him. And obviously, they can use him at shortstop, second, center field. Those are the key spots for him. But he can play all over. He's a threat if you want to use him off the bench to come in late in games. And then they also had Michael Kopech. Michael Kopech's a fascinating arm. He will never be the pitcher we all expected him to be. However, a move to the bullpen, and I'm assuming LA is going to keep him there, stretches out their bullpen. And I just know from talking to a guy like Ross Stripling over the years when he was with the Dodgers. Ross Stripling was a guy where they looked at his numbers and his analytics. They said, you are going about pitching the completely wrong way. You're not throwing this pitch enough. You're not using your breaking ball early in counts enough. You're relying on your fastball. And I have a feeling the Dodgers getting a guy like Kopech to add him into that bullpen, they're going to sit him down and do the same thing. And we're going to finally see that live arm of Michael Kopech make an impact on a winning ball club.
Yeah, I mean, they need something out of that bullpen. So it certainly doesn't hurt to get Kopech and add him to the mix. You know, this is a guy who I saw him against the Angels. I drove down to Anaheim last year, and he was starting for the White Sox, and he was abysmal. And I hammered the over 2.5 earned runs, and that hit in like the second inning. He was a walk machine. Out of the bullpen, we've seen an immaculate inning out of him, but we've also seen him struggle with accuracy and with walks as well. If the Dodgers, I feel like this is a guy who, if he just throws the ball in the strike zone, right, he's his own worst enemy. If he just throws strikes, he's hard to hit. It's a matter of giving guys free passes for him. Some other deals that we've seen quickly around the league, Michael Lorenzen going from Texas to Kansas City. Intriguing because a lot of people thought the Rangers, despite being under 500, wouldn't sell because they're only 4.5 back from first place in their division. And the Royals have starting pitching. I mean, that's one of the things that they've done really well. How do you see Lorenzen fitting in on Kansas City?
Well, it's interesting with him because he's the ability to be a swing man. He can go to the bullpen. He can start. But I do think there's some concern in Kansas City about Cole Reagans, who's been electric. However, 4 earned runs yesterday, 3 earned runs on Monday, and a guy who's not thrown a lot of innings in a single season in his career. Perhaps a little bit of concern there that it's going to wear on him throughout the season. And one quick note that impacts today's games. Jack Flaherty for the Tigers was scratched from his start against the Cleveland Guardians, being replaced by Bo Brisk. So perhaps Jack Flaherty will be on the move before the end of our show.
I've been saying it for weeks now. Flaherty to the Dodgers has just been making too much sense. Send him home. He's a Harvard-Westlake kid from Burbank. That's, you know, 15 minutes from where I'm at. Flaherty to the Dodgers makes sense. Hour 2 coming up, and we're leading it off with Jay Gruden. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into Sharp Money.